This is an address entitled The Practice of Christian Science by William D. Kilpatrick, a teacher of Christian Science. This is his association address of 1928. I want to take up that phase of metaphysics upon which I briefly touched earlier in the afternoon, and concerning which I said I would speak again. That is the fact that each one of us lives in a world of his own creating. Probably one of the most concise statements appearing of late along that line, outside of the writings of Mrs. Eddy, was a statement I read to you last year from the pen of a noted English physical scientist, quoted as follows. Quote, "Of the intrinsic nature of matter, science knows nothing and never can know anything. Of what matter is, science tells us nothing. For all we know, matter may itself be mental. The old view, therefore, that atoms or electrons are the ultimate reality, and that by interacting on one another in accordance with the laws of nature, they produce our minds with all their hopes and aspirations, has no longer any scientific basis. Another bugbear that many artists and religious people have found so depressing, the iron laws of nature, also acquire an entirely new status as the result of recent scientific work. It can be shown that these laws are the results of the mind's own action. The laws of nature are not something imposed on an independently existing universe from without. Indeed, not only the laws of nature, but space and time and the material universe itself are constructions of the human mind. To an altogether unsuspected extent, the universe we live in is a creation of our own minds." Close quote. And there it is in a nutshell. Everything we see, feel, taste, smell, or hear is seen or felt or tasted or heard or smelt by mortal consciousness, and not by any of the organs of seeing, feeling, tasting, smelling, or hearing. We are born into the world as infants without any of our faculties of sense developed to any extent. We come into the world seeing, feeling, tasting, smelling, and hearing as a result of the thinking of our mental parents. We are not cognizant of anything, or scarcely anything, that a mortal is cognizant of. We know neither good nor bad. Our growth and our maturity are the outward evidences of the accretion of mortal beliefs solely. We grow by taking on mortal mind, mortal beliefs, mortal thoughts. And as we take on these thoughts, then our world begins to shape itself in our consciousness so that each individual consciousness constitutes the world of each individual. We each see materially what each one holds in consciousness. The reason that you and I may see or become cognizant of the same material thing is not because of the thing, but because we both are entertaining the same sense of human belief about things. The world, the material world, is not an entity existing in and of itself, independent of our individual thinking. It is a product of our thinking. And As our thinking is rid of materiality, then our world is rid of materiality. As our thinking takes on materiality, our world takes on materiality. In the book of Proverbs, it is written, "As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he." That is, of course, according to the consciousness each individual entertains, so will his world be. So do you not see how we can make our own environment good or bad, according to our own state of consciousness? No one outside of ourselves has anything to do with the world, the material world, that you and I think surrounds us, because there is nothing outside of one's consciousness that one can be cognizant of. Mrs. Eddy has expressed the same thought as the one just quoted from Proverbs, where she says in Science and Health, quote, "Beauty, as well as truth, is eternal, but the beauty of material things passes away, fading and fleeting as mortal belief. Custom, education, and fashion form the transient standards of mortals. It is love which paints the petal with myriad hues, glances in the warm sunbeam, arches the cloud with the bow of beauty, blazons the night with starry gems, and covers the earth with loveliness." Close quote. Now, we all know, as Christian Scientists, that God, or love, knows nothing about the material petal of the rose or the flower, the rays of the sun, the rainbow, the stars, or the earth. And yet, Mrs. Eddy here tells us that it is love, God, which paints the petal with myriad hues, etc. It appears on the face of things as a contradiction. But in the light of the fact that you and I make our own world, our own environment, it becomes clear that the more of love you and I hold in consciousness, the more of God we reflect in our thinking, the more godlike the material things become to us. It is certain that the petal of a flower would not appear to a hating thought with the same beauty and promise that it would appear to a person whose thoughts were filled with love. It is the love in our own thinking that makes things beautiful to us. To a thorough materialist, to one steeped in crime and degradation, nothing much is very lovely or promising. One whose consciousness was not reflecting love would not find much beauty in the sun, the moon, the stars, the flowers, etc. So as you and I fill our thinking with that love which is God, then we are seeing nothing but the lovely in that world about us. That is, we are making our own environment one of loveliness by our own thinking. And so with claims of sickness. We relieve matter of all its danger and harm and bad effects by correcting the thought which endows matter with evil influence. With the right thought, the true thought about the thing before us. Inasmuch as the world in which you and I live is a product of our own consciousness or thinking, it can readily be seen how we can bring happiness and beauty into the world, not by changing the world or by changing people, but by filling our thoughts so full of love and truth that evil and unhappiness will not come into our experience. Remember this, and you may save yourselves and others a great deal of unhappiness and pain. that the moment the actions, the activities, or the attitude of another begins to give you concern, then is the time for you to get busy with your own mental household and do a little house cleaning on your own account. The actions, attitude, or activities of others will not concern or bother you unless your own thought or consciousness is all wrong. You cannot make the world a nice place to live in, nor can you make conditions about you tolerable simply by changing the material conditions or people. Material conditions and people please or annoy you in proportion as your own thought is right or wrong. We see, feel, taste, smell, and hear just exactly what we think. Just the moment you and I cease our thinking, at just that moment does the material disappear. Matter exists only in thought. It has no substance nor entity, not given it by mortal thinking. Remember in this connection that Mrs. Eddy says in Science and Health, quote, "Metaphysics resolves things into thoughts, and exchanges the objects of sense for the ideas of soul." Close quote. And in miscellaneous writings she writes, quote, "Midst the falling leaves of old-time faiths, above the frozen crust of creed and dogma, the divine mind force, filling all space and having all power, upheaves the earth. In sacred solitude, divine science evolved nature as thought and thought as things." Close quote. Therefore, the thought of a thing is the thing. The only thing that makes matter tangible to you and me is the thought we entertain about it. It does not exist outside of human consciousness. So, when each individual human consciousness is bereft of its material thinking by the substitution of right thinking, then matter disappears and the demonstrations of Jesus become possible to all of us. If the walls of the room in which the 11 disciples were gathered after Jesus' crucifixion and burial in the tomb did not exist simply as creations of thought, Jesus never could have appeared in their midst when the doors were all closed and the windows bolted. If distance and time and space had appeared to Jesus in any other form than thought, he could not have instantaneously transported the ship across the Sea of Galilee. On that occasion, he entered the ship with his disciples, and immediately the ship was on the other side, without the passage of time or the operation of material motion or effort on the part either of Jesus or those with him.